Well, welcome to my mobile studio. This is Paul O'Mahony leaving his house in Glenmire on the eastern side of Cork City and heading in towards the place that was made famous, I suppose, in modern times by the Queen of England. I'm going to the English Market. Now, all sorts of people here would say that it was very famous before the Queen ever came there and that the reason the Queen came there was that it was famous, but whatever you want to say, it's a great place to go. And if you ever have half an idea of coming to Cork, all the guidebooks will tell you that the English Market is a place you have to go to. And I'm going in there having had this haircut yesterday. And the haircut is in preparation for going to a ball this evening. Now, those of you who know me will know that I'm not a ball-going guy. I had a spell when I was a student at university in my first year of going to balls. It was all a new thing to me. This was before Debs were ever invented. I'd never been to a Debs, but the first year at university I went to several balls, dressed up in the suit and, went out for the night. And then I stopped going to them. Actually, I have to say, almost like because I decided I didn't like the consumerism or the overconsumption, and I became a very left-wing political person who kind of, said to myself, well, I boycott the balls then. And then over the next period of my life, which was a long period of my life, I didn't get invited to balls. And I didn't put myself in the way of being invited, and I certainly never bought a ticket for a ball and bought a table as a sponsor when I was in business, when I set up my first business in 1998. It never crossed my mind that it would be a good way to do business development by sponsoring a table at a ball. But anyway, this is all context. This is all saying, this is what I'm doing today. I'm going into the English Market because I'm going a ball. Actually, that doesn't make sense. I the connection between going into town is that I fancy a bit of relief from thinking about the ball, and I fancy looking at food, and I fancy walking around the place. I did think of a very bold thought during the day today, and it was, this is a black tie event this evening. And I thought, it's a marketing event. In other words, they'll be full of marketeers at it. It's the Marketing Institute of Ireland in Cork, their annual ball. And there'll be it'll be themed, and it'll be Hollywood, and it'll be Hollywood stars. But all the people going to the ball, it's black tie. I'm not required to go in fancy dress at all. And that's the point. I went through thinking to myself, what are marketers really like, actually? How do marketers really think? Do they think intuitively and instinctively and by disposition in every way of, how can I stand out from the crowd? Is that their first thought about everything? You know, they want to get their clients to stand out from the crowd. Nearly said out from the cloud, but I suppose they want to stand up in the cloud. But anyway, do they want to do it themselves? Do they want to make a mark? So then I thought, black tie this evening, all of us are going to look the same. I can't speak for the women, but I certainly can speak for the men, that the fashion side of going to a ball, black tie, is going to revolve around two pieces of accessories. One is the bow tie. And you can wear, at a black tie event, you can wear a bow tie in flamboyant colours. You can do that. There will be some men wearing bow ties that make a statement. Then you can go for this thing you put around your waist and call it cummerbatch or a cummerbun. Cummerbun, I think. And that can also be a colourful little number which reveals that you are a person of some distinct taste colour that you wear. You may in fact not be wearing one at all. And there are one or two people I have met in my entire life who would wear distinct shoelaces. Yes, you may never have come across a person who wears distinct shoelaces. I know one for sure in Cork and one in the UK. But that's all. those people are quite remarkable because they wear remarkable shoelaces. There is a guy in America called Ted Rubin, and he wears remarkable socks, and everywhere he goes, and you can find him, he's TEDRUBIN on social media, you will see that he shares large numbers of photographs. He does more Twitter than I do, so he's a very, very high quantity user of Twitter. But he's he has a brand identifier, which is his socks. So, but that's about it. That's about it. When you look across the crowded room in the Silver Springs Hotel tonight, and you're a marketer at this event, every man will look the same in the distance. And, you know, that, of course, equates with being boring. And the crazy, ridiculous idea I had today was to contact my business partner and say, John, you know, I feel like going to the ball dressed in our brand colours. Would this be an example of guerrilla marketing? Yeah, now, guerrilla marketing is a term used for, you know, well, actually, people who would go to the ball dressed in our brand colours would definitely be doing guerrilla marketing, because it would be disruptive, it would be unexpected, it would be a surprise. And in fact, if you then manage to get a video camera following you round, there's even a slight chance that people who turn up in the change agent's brand colours this evening, that the YouTube video or the video would go viral, whether it's on YouTube or Vimeo, that would get a lot of hits on it. It would be amusing. It wouldn't necessarily win us any extra clients, but it would win some kind of notoriety and memorability. So I think to myself, what about that? No, my wife would kill me. Let's be straight. There's no way I would be allowed to go to this black tie event in Cork wearing the change agent brand colours, which are a tone of green, a tone of red, and it's a bluey green. If you look at our website, you'll see it. And black. So, you know, there is a possibility that I'll find a bow tie this afternoon that's in either the red or the green of change agents. And if that is the case, I will certainly be unable to resist buying a red, or actually a green bow tie and a red cummerbund. If I could get the exact colours, the Pantone match, I would definitely do that, just for fun. Because that wouldn't be so remarkable. I wouldn't be courageous enough, brave enough, to turn up this evening ready for the ball, dressed in red and green. You know, fully, meaning a red jacket with green trousers, for example. I wouldn't be brave enough to do that. I wouldn't be bold enough to do that. But it made me think of something else then, and this is where I'm really going on to my most substantial point in this particular audiobook is yet to come. And it's all about the number of times I've heard the phrase, you know, you've got to be careful about what you do these days when it comes to this. Or you've got to be careful. You've got to consider the way other people might react, and got to take that into account. And I've heard quite a lot of this all my life. You've got to fit in. You've got to fit in. You've got to consider the, at its most extreme, you've got to consider the feelings and expectations of others, and you don't want to be, you know, tall poppy. You don't want to be standing out from the crowd. You do not want to be bold. Be careful, and everyone will be happier. Things will flow more smoothly. There will be less friction. You've got to be careful. And that extends to situations like if I walk down the street today. Today is actually take raw photographs on a public street of people day. There are a whole lot of professional photographers, I think, and maybe even serious amateur photographers around the world taking photographs of urban grot. And I think that includes people, to be honest. I think it probably will include photographs of people who are particularly down at heel and you know, marginalized and poor. So it will actually probably involve taking a lot of photographs that will stir strong emotions. But we're advised, people are advised, I've heard advice from all quarters at various stages, you know, that you've got to be careful when you go down the street in public and take photographs. People might object. Somebody coming towards you might object to it. And I think that's very, very good advice, really, isn't it? I mean, certainly my blood pressure would be lower than it would be if I was careful in my approach to living. If I was, primarily modifying my behavior so that it didn't cause any single other person a form of upset. I mean, that would be, I would have better blood pressure. I, in theory, could imagine that I might live longer because the blood pressure wouldn't rise. Fall so much, it'd be even balanced. So, I mean, without going into it in detail, I could layer and layer, you know, different types of arguments in favour of the proposition that it's good to live carefully. Let me start a new paragraph then and say, I'm afraid I don't have that option. I'm afraid I don't have the option to live carefully. I have developed a disposition, a personality, and a track record of not living carefully, of being bold, different, differentiating myself from others, consciously and unconsciously. I mean, it would take too long to tell stories about how long I did it without realizing that I was doing it. And I'm not proud of all the ways in which I have been obstreperous and different, difficult in terms of complying with other people and other people's wishes or other people's sensitivities. I am not going to, try to engage in mea justificando or something like that. No, what I am going to say, though, is that I am one of these people who is, by track record, different and differentiating. I do things, and I think of things deliberately to be different. I am not as extreme as some. I'm not as courageous as some, and neither am I as extreme as some. And I'm, you know, you make mistakes on the way. You fail to be different enough, or you are too different for anybody's good. But basically, I am somebody who belongs in the school of thought that says, be bold, be different, stand out. You get just one shot at life, and, you know, sod the begrudgers. I don't want to, and I don't need to, persuade everybody that of my point of view. I only need a certain amount of company to keep me going through life. I'm very comfortable with conflict and difference and friction and confrontation. I'm comfortable with these things. I'm comfortable with other people being cross at me. They're entitled, and I've developed an ability to, you know, grant them full, you know, I don't grant them power to be angry with me, but I see them as people as having a full justifiable right, and I don't see myself as being right in any sense, except having the right to be different. I have the right to be bold in this meaning, and I mean this precisely, I have the power to be bold. I have authorized myself to be bold and different. And I have, at times, authorized myself to be insensitive to the desires of others and to say, they wish me to do this, they would prefer if I did that, and good luck to them with that preference, and they're entitled to it, and I respect them for it, and I defend their right to have it, but I'm going my way. So I belong to I suppose you'd say this is a bit of a weird way of thinking, as from certain people's point of view, I know that I would be regarded as a bit of a weirdo. You know, non-compliant, you know, there was a time when I was so contrary in disposition that it didn't matter what was the predominant direction of a conversation. I would deliberately take an alternative view. I don't do that anymore, actually. I have learned the joy of actually agreeing with people. But I won't want to say that I always had that. It took me a long journey in life to appreciate the full joy that there is in being under the same flag as certain other people. I have set up a company called Change Agents, and we would say a lot of things about ourselves, but one of the things we would say and have said and have put publicly on at least one of our profiles is that we're anti the status quo. And I have to admit that that was awfully easy to write down, because I know that there isn't a, you know, I'm going to walk through Cork in a minute now and I'm going to notice things. In fact, I look at the wall in front of me and I think, God, that's a bloody mess. I think that could look a lot better. Now, somebody else might look at it and say, what does it matter? What does it matter? Well, move on. It's not your responsibility. But I do have an eye that leads me into the mentality, or leads me into the emotion of, how could I change that? Yes. How could I get rid of that bit of urban grot that I see in front of me? Now, when I went to Lisbon, for example, a good number of years ago, a place I would highly recommend, I was besotted with the air of benign dilapidation that I found in Lisbon, and I didn't want to change the peeling paint off the walls there. I didn't. I liked that. But then again, I thought that I was probably at odds with the developers who were trying to tidy up Lisbon and sanitize it and turn it into something which would be much more respectable looking. So what I'm really doing, I suppose, in this audio boo is flying the flag for those who would say that it's more important to be bold than to be careful. And I suppose there's no two ways I can think about this other than this, which is that let's, you know, divide the room into those who say it's their mission in life to live carefully, harmoniously with their neighbours as much as possible. And those who feel that their mission in life is to be bold, to make a mark, to change the world for the better, obviously. And I'm not trying to say one is better than the other. I'm just trying to say there are two camps, and I belong in one. And I don't know which of the two camps you belong in. And there are those who will try and sit on the fence. And, you know, that's, you know, sociologically, that's a recognized position, sitting on the fence. There are people who, by disposition, would prefer to sit on the fence. And there's a wonderful book called The 33 Strategies of War. I can't remember who wrote it now. I came across it through a group here in Cork called Smarter Egg. Aidan Enright introduced me to the book in the first place. And it has one of the 33 strategies of war is that you basically divide the room as quickly as you can. You try to find out who's on your side and who isn't on your side, and there'll be a whole load of people who will appear to be on your side, who will appear to agree with you, but actually they'll be on the other side. Now, the other thing about this is to be remembered, in case I'd be misinterpreted on this, is that you actually, there has to be another side. There have to be two sides. There's no development unless there's development against something. Hegel said it. There's a thesis and an antithesis and a synthesis. And then the synthesis turns into a thesis and it generates an antithesis, and then you have a new synthesis. And philosophically, that was a powerful, you know, model taken up by Karl Marx and turned into a different purpose as a political philosophy. So there we are. Be bold. Be bold. Be different. Be a misfit. Be a weirdo, be a freak. That's kind of the stance I'm standing up for. That's the stance I'm voicing. Perhaps it could be voiced better, but I voiced it my way, and it's now time to go out in the rain. Thank you ever so much for getting this far in your listening. You are one hell of a brick. Thank you.